Thank you for listening to this DuPont Media production, available on all major podcast platforms. This is Rod Peterson on demand. Send us your opinions now. We won't victimize you unless you really deserve it. Now, back to your host, Rod Peterson.
Welcome, everyone, to the Rod Peterson Show. I'm Nick Lewis, and this is The Takeover. I'm sitting here with two great football players. Chris, you don't need that yet. You can hear me. Can you hear me? Yeah, you won't need it for a while, but I'm here with Chris Getzlaff and Charleston Hughes is sticking around for another hour. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Indeed, no problem. So right before the break, I was talking about you being the Keon killer. I just want to know, man. We used to have some battles. It was last person with the ball, you know, from Dressler making diving catches, Cope making one-handed catches, you know, you making your plays, always over 50-yard touchdowns. How did it feel on your side, you know, those battles? Like, when you knew you were playing us, everybody knew they had to bring their best, especially those playoff games.
Yeah, I mean, you knew that, like, that was the rivalry. I mean, for the majority of my career, it was Calgary all the time. I mean, it's always been built up that Winnipeg is the rivalry because of the big Labor Day Banjo Bowl Classic. I mean, all that. But I mean, during my tenure in the CFL and the majority of the years I played with the Riders, I mean, it was Calgary because you were going toe to toe with them for playoff seeding to start with, and then you were likely going to see them in the playoffs. So, majority of the time in Calgary and the odd one in Regina.
So when you knew that you were going to get so much man-to-man, and I'm talking the Chris Jones days in Calgary, and you knew you were going to get so much man-to-man, and you knew Keon was going to follow you everywhere, did you like that matchup? Or, like, did that excite you? Because you put on some wonderful performances.
Yeah, I mean, it was a perfect opportunity as a receiver. I mean, you know, throughout training camp, through all your training, I mean, you're running one-on-ones all the time. And no matter what level you're at, the receivers get to win most of those battles because it's in their favor. So when we got to line up against Calgary, when they were doing all that man-to-man and zero coverage, I mean, I was essentially, I love Keon. I think he's a good player, and I think he was a great player in the league. But at that point in time, he was considered Calgary's third best DB, and I was getting to line up against him man-to-man every single week. I'm going to like that matchup every single time. I mean, Calgary was dedicating, you know, their two top guys to Fantuz and Dressler. So luckily for me, I'm lining up against what would be considered the third best DB at the time, which was heavily in my favor, so I look forward to those games every time.
It used to drive me crazy up the wall, especially as a defensive lineman, because I'm like, when you look at it, especially because both of y'all are kind of the same type receiver, because when you think of receiver, you think of speed and fast and quickness. And I used to ask all the DBs, like, how are you getting beat by these guys? And then they all say the same thing. They make you play to their speed. They make you play to their level. So when it comes to, like, savviness, you know, both of you guys were real savvy at receiver. So
just it's fluid. You know, it's always about being fluid in your transition. You know, when you run your corner route, there was no false step. There was nothing. It was coming out fluid. You took your 3-4 hard steps coming out without breaking stride. And that's hard to cover, especially for DB speed turns. The field so big without any help, it truly gives you the advantage because you gave no shoulder tendencies on what you're going to pose, if you're going curl or you're going to come back or if you're going to the corner. So I can attest that, you know, you were one of the very good, you know, very, very good route runners in this league. And, you know, speaking of Andy, I seen Andy last weekend, you know, shaking Andy's hands. I don't think people understand, like, I got big hands, but Andy's hands are a lot bigger than mine. Can you talk about Andy Fantuz and, like, just him, or just talk about the Canadian Air Force, right? Just going back to that time and just thinking about your receiving core, knowing that you were called the Canadian Air Force and going out and doing what y'all did.
Yeah, I think it was pretty cool to have a group that was able to just get a name tag to them. And I think the hugest benefit to it all was that we all kind of came in right around the same time. So, I mean, Andy came in a year before I did, and then Rob came in a year after I did. And then Weston was the American that was just tagged into the Canadian Air Force. But
He's from Bismarck. He's just close enough.
He's close enough. Yeah, that's right. That's right. But, I mean, Andy, he's just a special player. I mean, he has that savviness that you were talking about, knows how to get open. I mean, he's not a blazer by any stretch, but, you know, you give him that waggle, and he's not slow, that's for sure. So, but his hands, like you were saying.
His hands are huge.
The biggest hands I've ever seen. Like they
what is wearing, like 4 or 5X gloves?
I think it was 4X.
Oh, my God.
I think
goodness.
He was wearing 4X.
You haven't seen this, Charles.
Slay the claw.
Like, look at this. You see this? These are pretty big. Andy's that like this on me. It's pretty fascinating on how big his hands are. And you can understand, like, he would make the catch. Somebody grabbed him on the waist. He put the ball in one hand as he's going down. And he didn't care if anybody came and tried to swipe it out. Like, his hand pretty much wrapped around the whole football.
Right. He was one of those few guys that could break the, you know, unwritten rules or of carrying a football, because he could grip the whole thing with his whole hand. He used to be able to hold a ruler in between his pinky and his thumb.
Oh, wow.
30-centimeter ruler. He could grip it with his pinky and his thumb.
That is nuts.
I mean,
yeah. Shout out to Andy Fenn, too.
Yeah, with the big with the claw.
Hey, man, we're broadcast here today, man. We with Perry Mobile Text Line. Perry Mobile, your SaaStel authorized dealer. And also the Capital Mall, Capital Auto Mall, Universal Collision Center, daily poll question. Should Charleston have been the MVP of the, or the MOP defensively of the league last year? Andy, so I don't know if you know what we're doing here. This is the takeover, ex and current players. We have a stacked lineup. We had John Bowman and Damon Allen the first hour. This hour we got Joaquin Bradley and Ryan Phillips joining us. And I got my hat of goodies over here, Andy, and just want to let you know that Andy. Or Chris.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I keep calling you Andy. Yeah. I got Andy up. Hey, Chris,
shout
I'm sorry.
Out to Andy. The claw.
The claw. Chris, my bad.
Ruler
so,
fingers.
I got my little bag of goodies over here. I just put some topics in because I didn't know where I wanted to go today. So the topic I just pulled out, we'll start with you, Charleston. Cowboys versus Bears tonight. Who you got and why?
Oh, I'm going to have to go with the Cowboys, you know. They're the better team. I think the Bears are struggling pretty much.
It's in Chicago.
Yeah, but they're not playing pretty good right now. And I'm not a believer. Defense hasn't been holding up too good. I think I went with them in the last game they played against – who they play last? Might have been Buffalo.
No, Buffalo played Dallas last week.
Okay, so I can't remember who they played against. But I went with them last week, and they lost again. So, no, Detroit. Play Detroit last. So, and Detroit ended up winning that game. So it upset me. So I'm 100% going with Dallas.
Going Dallas. What about you, Chris?
I think Dallas. I think Dallas as well. I mean, Chicago's defense, considering how much they're on the field, I think is still a pretty solid defense. I mean, their offense for the majority of the year hasn't been able to move the ball whatsoever. Dallas, I find that their defense plays pretty well against weak offenses. So I think that that's going to give them an edge. And, I mean, they have top three offense in the league. So I imagine they'll be able to move the ball at least a little bit against them.
Man, I'm a huge Cowboys fan. My friends in Texas try to kick me out of the club because I'm not a Dak fan. I know that there's worse quarterbacks than Dak Prescott. But I believe Dak is best with everyone around him. As athletes, ex-athletes, and current athletes, when I was in Calgary, I never – Huff already told me, you're not going to be the highest paid being here. I was like – I was fine with that because I knew my role. I knew I could go in. I knew I was going to ball every year. At what point does Dak really sit back and say, I need Amari, I need Zeke, I need a good defense in order to have a chance to win? Because right now when you're paying DeMarcus Lawrence over 100, you're paying – you're going to have to pay Amari Cooper a lot of money. You're paying Zeke a lot of money.
Pay, yeah.
You're paying your O-line a lot of money, Travis Frederick, Zach Martin, and Tyron Smith. At what point does Dak say, I need all this to be the best I can be, and really say, I'll take $25 million, instead of saying, I'll take $40 million, to where now you're getting rid of good pieces in order – and I don't think he can do that. What do you think?
I just think – in general, with Dak, they don't ask him to be a quarterback. They ask him just not, don't turn the ball over, you know, manage the game, keep progressing, keep getting first downs, hand the ball off to Zeke. That's all they really ask him to do. They don't ask him to make incredible throws. They don't ask him to throw 30, 40 times a game, 35 times a game. They ask him to throw maybe 20, 25, and just don't turn the ball over. When you got a quarterback that can do that and manage the game well, I mean, you in a good spot as a team, because turnovers is what really hurt you.
Yeah. What do you think?
I'm kind of with you on Dak. I do think that he's a good quarterback, but I mean, in the NFL, it's just who's the next guy that's going to get paid, and that's going to be the new highest paid, regardless if they're the best. And I mean, I don't think that he's in the upper echelon of the quarterbacks that are out there are in the NFL right now, for a lot of the reasons that you were talking about. So, I mean, I think it would be a mistake to pay him that, because it's going to hinder the players around him, like you're talking about, Nick. So, I don't know. I think he's definitely shown flashes of being a pretty amazing quarterback, especially this year. But I can't put my trust in that if you're going to pay him that kind of money, because I think you're going to hinder the rest of the team quite a bit from a salary standpoint.
And I say
standpoint.
The same thing, man. I say the same thing. It's so crazy being a Cowboy fan, because you know what's going to happen. You're headed towards mediocrity, and there's nothing you can do about it by being handicapped, because he is one of the top half of the quarterbacks in the league, right? You could get worse. But, you know, you look at a guy like Lincoln Riley. If he comes in, do you take a Jalen Hurts and a Lincoln Riley? And because Jalen and Hurts and Dak look to be pretty much the same to me at this point when Dak was coming out of Ole Miss, or not Ole Miss, but Mississippi State. But it kind of brings me to my next question. Sean McVay said he's got to stop being dumb and get the ball to Gurley more. The NFL used to be a game about running the ball and field position and defense, and that's how you won games. Now they're throwing the ball all around the field. You have a lot of quarterbacks that are struggling. You see Jared Goff is getting paid a lot of money, and he's struggling. Do you think there's too much passing in the NFL right now for teams to really win games?
Everybody can't be Tom Brady. Everybody can't go into the game, you know, throwing 40, 50 times a game and still winning the game. You have to have a good running back. You have to run the ball. You have to, you know, always put your offense in second and short the best way you can, or third and short the best way you can, to get a first down. I was thinking the CFL rules for a second right there. But yeah, NFL, you want to get first downs. And the easiest way to get first down is to get in short yardage. Easiest way to get in short yardage is to run the ball, especially without turning the ball over. If you got a good running back, you can run the ball. You can get in second and short, third and short, and still progress and have a chance to get a first down where you don't have to throw a deep throw, deep 10-yard, 15-yard throw to get a first down. You're in good shape. Plus, the run sets up the pass. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Chris?
I mean, I think that game plan should be entirely dictated by who your opponent is. I mean, should you line up every single week and throw the ball 45 times? No, I don't think so, even if your strength is throwing the ball, and vice versa. I don't think that you should be running the ball all the time if you're playing a solid front seven that's going to shut that down, or the game plan could be to expose the back end of that team. So I think it should be more dictated on the opponent and how you attack them each and every game. So obviously your personnel is going to help dictate that,
yep.
You know, where your strengths are. But run does always set up the pass.
Do you see more, now that you're done, do you see more attacking the team's weakness or using your strength? What do you think is more valuable for a team? Or if you were coaching, what would you really want to do more? Would it be attack the other team's weakness, or would it be to really do what you do well?
Ooh, I guess the best way to attack a team is to expose a team. I just look at, you got to figure out what a team weakness is, what a team strength is. You got to know who their best players are on the field. You got to know where you can open them up at and expose them. That's how I look at it at all times.
Yeah, I think it's got to be kind of a combination, right? Obviously, you're going to have to stick with your strengths the majority of the time. That's how you built your team and how you're trying to attack each game. But looking at the weaknesses of the other team, even that if even if that's not exactly your strength, still think that you got to take some shots there. I think no one does it better than New England. Yeah. New England will come out and they'll throw the ball 45, 50 times, and then the next game based on their opponent could be running the ball 25, 30 times. I mean, their coaching just top to bottom is lights out, right?
Yeah, speaking of New England, so they always say they're going to take away your best two options on defense, right? If you got a receiver, they're going to put Stephon Gilmore on him, and he's going to be locked up. He's going to get some help sometimes, but you're not going to know when that is. They're going to do a good job of taking away the running back. Speaking of just the way that they do that, now, think about being an offensive coordinator, do you already game plan your top two guys out because you know that they're going to try to take them away? Or do you still try to game plan and find every way possible to get those guys the ball?
Yeah, I was about to say, I just think you just find every way you can to get them the ball, whether you got to stack them, put them in a bunch, move them around, motion them. You got to find savvy ways to get them the ball. Even if you got to line your receiver up in the backfield, then motion them out just to, you know, screw with the coverage a little bit. You know, you got to do whatever you can to get your guys the ball.
Yeah, I think you have to find ways to take advantage of that matchup, whether it's alignment or motion or switching, making a switch happen, whatever it is. I think that you have to try to find a way to get them the ball. But when you're actually game planning, I mean, you know, some of your other shots, you know, might be to your secondary receivers in that case, because you know that their primary guys or their better cover guys are going to be sucked over to a certain area.
Yeah, and it just goes to show, when I remember watching teams when they played the Rams early in this season, they went for it on fourth down a lot. They figured the Rams were going to put up a bunch of points, and they were like, we need to use all four downs to be able to win this game. So they were trying to play within the rules and say, we're going to need to average over 2.5 yards a down to be able to get first downs instead of averaging over three. So that's something that teams have gone to versus the Rams, but they haven't been able to score very well this year.
Yeah, it seemed like a desperation move to me, but if you got to go for it on all four downs, man, you trying to find ways to win. You trying to use every option, use every coaching decision to actually try to win a game.
Yeah, the Rams offense, I mean, it's not the same. It's definitely not the same as it was last year, right? So, I mean, they've had a couple different injuries throughout the year, which obviously will cause you to take a little step back. But I don't think teams should be treating it quite that way. Early on in the year, I can understand. I mean, they were as potent as it gets last year, so you're kind of predicting a similar outcome.
Yeah.
So you take your opportunities when you got them. But I mean, if you're on your own side of the ball, especially in the NFL, I mean, it's pretty tough to go for it on fourth down, because you're putting them in a position to score pretty quickly.
Well, we're going to have to take a break there. I'm Nick Lewis. Rod and Darren are in Houston. Yee-haw. And we'll be back. This is the Rod Peterson Show on Facebook Live and rodpeterson.com.
Every sale held in 2019 has led up to our biggest event of the year. Ring in the savings with year-end clear out at Capital GMC. We're making a list and checking it twice of the biggest savings on brand new vehicles this holiday season. Get savings up to $15,000 or finance rates as low as 0% up to 84 months on select new inventory. Plus, every single one of our new 2019 models has had its price heavily discounted. Celebrate the most wonderful time of year with Saskatchewan's largest GM dealer, Capital GMC in Regina.
Celebrate the 5th anniversary with friends, family, everyone you know. Plan your next group experience with your Saskatchewan Rush. Group benefits include block seating, ticket discounts, and a dedicated fan experience coordinator. For more, visit saskrush.com/groupnightout.
Bronco Plumbing and Heating has been servicing Regina and surrounding areas since 1978. At Bronco, we service all makes and models of furnaces, air conditioners, water heaters, and water softeners. Bronco also provides full sewer service, plumbing service, and duct cleaning. Call Bronco Plumbing and Heating today at 306-781-2090. Proud sponsor of the Rod Peterson Show.
Cheers to the 16 guys who never back down. And to the smooth, refreshing beer with a real beer taste. Original 16. Underdogs. since 1989.
If you're looking for radio that's got a great message, well, we've got it. LTD Radio plays the best of the 60s to the 90s, all with amazing stories about people right from your community. You can listen live right now at ltdradio.com, iTunes, Streama, and TuneIn. LTD Radio, music to build a better day.
Did you know you can catch all the best moments from the show on all our social media platforms? Now back to the studio with Rod.
Hey, you're back with Nick Lewis here on the Rod Peterson Show. I'm joined by Chris Getzlaff and Charleston Hughes. And we're sponsored by Rod's Bronco Plumbing and Heating Rant. Rod's Rant for Bronco Plumbing and Heating, your factory authorized Bryant Furnace Dealer. We have a special guest coming in. Guys, you can put the headphones on. We have Joaquin Bradley joining us today. Joaquin Bradley played at Middle Tennessee State, played 8 years in the CFL for Hamilton and Edmonton at DB, finished his career with 13 interceptions. Joining us from, you in Hamilton?
No, yeah, I'm in Hamilton, Nick. I'm in Brantford, Ontario.
Okay, I can see the side of your face. I can see, there you go.
Can you see me?
Yeah, we got Joaquin in. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
I'm great, man. I'm just sitting here with Charleston Hughes and Chris Getzlaff. And one, I want to say thank you for joining the show. We always talk a lot about – I always tell one story. Every time that we're around each other, I always tell everybody the story. First time I met you, the first time that I really knew who you were, Henry Burris goes down in Hamilton. Jason Gesser comes in the game. And I remember Barato told him, he said, whatever you do, don't throw the field hitch. Tell us what happened when Jason Gesser came out there and threw the field hitch.
Well, Nick, as you know, the first time I let him get away with it, right? I let him test the water. So he threw the field hitch. I came up and I made the tackle. The second time he threw it, I took that thing to the house, 78 yards. it was a mistake that he made. He didn't make that mistake again.
Don't throw the field hitch. You remember those words, don't you?
Don't throw the field hitch.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're only throwing the field hitch if you're in cover three.
Yeah,
that's it.
There you go.
Three holes. You don't throw the field hitch. And there's not a lot of quarterbacks can do it anymore. You look at a guy like Jeremiah Masoli there in Hamilton, who's got a great strong arm who can fit it out to the sideline. So there's not a lot of quarterbacks that can get that done. But let's talk about what you've been up to lately. You had Bradley Sports performance and everything. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you were doing with the training? And I was at the East-West game last year, and I got to see some of the.
Yeah, absolutely. So I can't hear you, but one thing with Bradley Sports Performance, man, is something that I started a couple of years ago. I want to say I had it for 7 years. I used to go to gyms to try to get into training and, have a platform to work with the youth. And nobody would give me an opportunity. So you know how it is, Nick, man. When nobody give you an opportunity, we don't like being told too often. So I created my own opportunity. And I started my own performance gym called Bradley Sports Performance. I start working with the youth. I start working with high school players. I start working with professional players and college players that's going on to that next level. I trained Chris Ackie. I trained the Jordan Hoovers, guys that now is doing a good job in that league, So that was a good platform for me to get out there and show what I can do and give myself an opportunity to touch guys' lives. And as much as it was me touching their lives, it was them touching mine as well. You know what I'm saying? They always tell me what I did for them, but sometimes I don't think those guys understand what they actually did for me.
Yeah, it allows you to stay connected to the game. And I always say that when you're out there in the trenches and you're really giving the knowledge to those groups, it's a big difference between CIS and NCAA, just from [S2] Right. [S1] A coaching standpoint as well. So for you to take your knowledge and to do that, and then to parlay that into now coaching in the CIS. You were [S2] Right. [S1] At Waterloo last year, right?
Yes, correct.
And I hear you're the best, if not one of the best, if not the best DB coaches in the CIS. And can you talk to us a little bit about that, your approach, how you want your DBs to play, and just the mental aspect of how you prepare them for games?
Well, Nick, I prepare them on principles, man. I coach our principles. I always say our principles from the, you know, from the outside life, we can take that to the football field, right? So we start off with LDI. And LDI, it stands for Lockdown Incorporated. It's a mentality that we got. It's standing on principles. It's something that we started in Hamilton in 2005. And it's one thing that I stand on. It's one thing that I coach on. So I always tell my guys, you know, our play is not predicated off what the offense does. You know, that's going to change week in and week out. But what's going to be the same is our technique, the way we prepare, and our mental mindset. You understand what I'm saying? So we always going to go out there, prepare for whoever you put in front of us. It don't matter. We're ready to deal with the adversity because it's the LDI DNA, it's the principles that's inside of us. So that's my approach and that's my mindset, man. Everything I coach, I don't attack the player. I don't attack the player. I attack the principles.
That's it, man. And you can see the passion coming through, right? You can see how passionate you are. And it's good because I'm very passionate about it because I love it. I've trained kids for 12 years and I've worked with so many young guys that's gone on to do so many great things. And one of the things is passion. When you're passionate about something, you give whatever you have to give to it.
You find right now a lot of younger players really don't have passion like that about, you know, sports and football. So when you're training your kids like that and you're teaching them how to be passionate about locking somebody down, what does it feel like to get no catches in a game and don't see no action in football games? And you really show them that that's the kind of level you have to play at and that's the kind of level you have to get to play in a professional league.
You know, mindset is huge. Mindset is huge, and leadership. And when we talk about leadership and some of those qualities, you talk about principles and you talk about passion. Those are all qualities of being a great leader, right? You got to be passionate about what you're doing. You have to set what the value is. And the value is investing in yourself to grow to the point to have the chance to play this game for as long as you want. We know the game doesn't allow us to play as long as we want sometimes, and very few can walk away on their own terms. But at the end of the day, it's great to have people like you that's in these kids' lives. Also, I know that you're trying to move up into the CFL, and I think you'll be a huge addition. We're talking to Ryan Phillips later, and there's a lot of questions about young coaches. And I don't see it. And thing is, I've been around the game for 26 years, 27 years now, one coach and a 26 playing. So for you to be another guy that's played 8 years pro football and now coming in, coaching the CIS, training kids, and now wanting to move up in the CFL, what do you believe that you would add to a team being their DB coach?
It's value, Nick. It's value. Like you just said, man, you always got everything in life breaks down to value. You know, when I was at Hamilton guest coaching, you know, I used to go to the guys and I say, listen, before every when it was a stretch and I go to bro, I would go to every DB and I say, look, four in the possible. It's like playing spades, right? If you're my partner, I'm going to ask you what you got. You're going to say four in the possible. That's what we was expected to get in practice that day when it came to, I call interception brownies, right? Four in the possible, but it was a mindset, man. And that's what I want to bring. I'm always talking about the universe, you know, speaking into existence, holding each other accountable. Now, I would love to play for Charleston Hughes, you know what I'm saying, play with him, because I know that ball coming out quick. You know what I mean? So knowing your opponent.
Now, keep going. Yeah, I'm with you.
Man, so that's what I bring to the table, man. It's just the mindset, you know. It's the LDI, it's the principles, it's the mindset, it's the willingness to go out there and be great. One thing I learned from Coach O, the Mark Washington, the Jason Shivers, guys that mentor me that I can call all day and they give me advice is, you know what I mean, everything is all about greatness. You know what I'm saying? Those guys are good leaders. They're good coaches. But, man, they better man. You know, that's one thing. If you want to surround yourself by guys that's always positive, you know, not pessimistic about everything that goes on. And that's the key to success. When you lead and those players are followed, man, because they're going to see you standing on something solid. Principles. Principles don't change. Everything else going to change. Like I said, the offense going to change, but principles stay the same.
You will win, you will lose. That's it. You're going to win games, you're going to lose games, but you got to really trust in your view and trust in your vision that you believe what you're doing is going to help take your team or your position there. Me being around the running backs in Vancouver last year for the first time, and then I'm a type of person, I see you're the type of person that we invest in people. You know, I don't invest in you as an athlete. I want you to be a great man. I want you to go out and I want you to play as long as you want to play. I'll give you the tools to do it. I always say if you build a house, you need more than a screwdriver and a hammer. Right. So to be able to get in position to get the tools you need to be successful, now you can create a great foundation. You can build a beautiful house, but you can't do that. You can't do that if you don't have principles. If you can't do that, regardless of, you know, people know me when I was younger, I used to talk a lot of trash. I used to say a lot of things, but it was more to motivate myself because I needed the motivation to be able to go out there and do it. I created the alter egos. So I could be the superhero, right? So the Niccolo Dimes, the Geronimo Jones, that was the WWE character that I needed to create because I felt like I wasn't the type of person that could go on the field in front of that many people and do that. But when I gave myself a alter ego, now he was a bad mother, I ain't gonna say, but
there you go. It's the same thing with me, man, with Joaquin Bradley. Then you had Killer on the football field, right? It was just a bad talent. And another thing too, Nick, is I always like to coach the why. So if I'm talking to a player, I'm not going to, you know, when I'm coaching you up, I always say I attack the technique, right? I'm going to tell you why I'm asking you to do something. I'll give you an example, Nick. If we playing a team, you know it's 32 formation. Every time the number one receiver motion down, and I'm telling my field side corner to get inside because that motion is going to, it's going to eat up your leverage. You're going to put you from inside leverage to outside leverage because your new number one is the new number one becomes that number two receiver strong. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because and the one that motion down is number three. And you're going to get dig routes ran on you all day if you don't do it.
Exactly. They're going to run across it with a dig, or they're going to run into the flat double dig.
Yeah, and then set that up and then run a corner.
Then you run the corner off of it. Guess Lab going to run that corner.
They can't throw the dig. They can't throw the dig at the pass rush there.
You know, hey, maybe all us old guys, we can put together like a flag tournament.
Yeah.
You know, like us old guys running against the young guys. Yeah, we definitely got the mental aspect. Stuff, yeah. Hey, man.
There you go.
I appreciate you for joining us, man. You got any last words? I appreciate your passion. Appreciate you taking the time today to join us here on the Rod Peterson Show. You got any last words, brother?
Hey, Get Flack, what's up, man? And my old teammate, Dustin, how you doing? Hey, Dustin, continue, man, to keep doing what you're doing to show greatness, baby. I love watching you play. I can't surf, but I get down there with you. You know what I'm saying? Hey, anybody that's watching this video, man, hey, you want to? I'm always say to young guys in the league, man, I always ask yourself, you want to be good, you want to be great. And remember, what greatness is when you're in the midst of your trial, the midst of your devastation, the midst of your fire. And at that moment, you decide, I'm not going to be common. I'm going to be great. That's what it's about, Nick. That's how you change the culture, baby.
You just gave me chills.
Hey, that's it. Like, yeah, that's let him. Like, he should have been in Hamilton's locker room for that pregame speech right there with that one.
Right.
That's awesome. You know, that's awesome. I remember, you know, you think about, you know, when you give speeches and stuff like that. And I remember Teddy Atlas one time in the corner. And he told his boxer, he said, you know what? We're in the fire. He goes, but we're all right because we're firefighters. You have to feel comfortable in the fire.
Right.
When you're in that many front of that many people, there's a turnover, there's a change of possession. You look at the clock and you're down and you know you need something to happen. You're in the fire. But you have to be a firefighter. You have to be comfortable in the fire. You're going the opposite of everybody else. There's people that don't want the ball in their hands. You're like, I want it. You know what I'm saying? There's people that's like, I hope you throw it over there. I want it. You know, you have to feel comfortable in that fire. And I think that we've all excelled at that, and that's what allowed us to be as great as we were. Getz, man, how you feeling?
I feel good, man. What do you mean?
Getz got his Sunday best over here, man. This is a good reunion right here.
I thought I came in with the best socks on. I got the worst socks.
Hey, Charleston, before we sign off here and go to break again, you wanna shout out those glasses you got on there?
Ooh, Specs by Ryan. Go check them out, Regina.
There we go. Specs by Ryan. So, hey, we're closing down now. We're going to another break, and we come back, we'll have our last segment. And it's flying by really fast.
Think I'm going to cry.
We got to do it again.
All right, we got to.
But we got one segment left. Come back with us. We'll see you soon.
Universal Collision Center is Saskatchewan's premier auto body shop. Our extensive process ensures that every vehicle that comes through our state-of-the-art facilities is returned pre-accident condition, and that every UCC customer experience is an easy one. We're certified to repair all makes, all models, and all luxury brands, and Universal Auto Spa offers full-service detailing packages to suit you and your vehicle. Plus, we're the official body shop of your Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Universal Collision Center, 3910 Rochdale Boulevard and 2355 First Avenue in Regina.
Your favorite movies. Your episode after episode after episode season marathon. All in one beautiful little box. With Max TV Stream from Prairie Mobile, your SaskTel authorized dealer, you can experience the best of live TV and movies on demand, in home or on the go. Just $99. Entertainment your way, anyway. Get your Max TV Stream media box today for just $99. Prairie Mobile, your SaskTel authorized dealer. Lives fully connected.
Saskatchewan Snow Beef is the highest quality beef you will find, bred, born, and raised in Saskatchewan. Snow Beef is the result of crossbreeding full-blood Wagyu males with Holstein females. Much like a fine wine, when given the proper care and diet, the Snow Beef genetics develop superior marbling and flavor. The culmination of these efforts is the best beef you can get in Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan Snow Beef is available at Crave Kitchen and Wine Bar on Victoria Avenue in Regina, Little Red's Market Cafe in Mortlock, Saskatchewan, or take some home to your own grill by purchasing it at Local and Fresh, 1377 Hamilton Street in Regina. For more information, follow them on Facebook or Instagram at Sask Snow Beef.
Nestled in the scenic Qu'Appelle Valley, just 20 minutes northwest of Regina, is one of the finest golf courses in all of Saskatchewan, the Deer Valley Golf Club. The clubhouse has a full-service restaurant, and customers can enjoy a casual dining experience with spectacular views of the golf course and valley. A fully stocked golf shop, staffed by PGA of Canada professionals, is equipped to meet all of your golf apparel and equipment needs. Book your tee time, family event, or corporate tournament today at the Deer Valley Golf Club. Call 306-731-1445 or log on to deervalleygolf.ca.
My name is Karen Allen. I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2007. The treatments themselves were difficult, but the care and attention that I received was phenomenal. But what if, with the advances in technology that have been made, having that better equipment would increase survival rates by 1, maybe 2%? That's people.
Hey, honey, can you get one of the kids to show me how this Twitter thing works? Honey, I need to get on Instagram. Time for more of the Rod Peterson Show.
One last call for text on the Prairie Mobile text line. Family Trust Prairie Mobile, that's where we get our phones from. Got to pay the bills in this thing.
Nobody called me yet.
We got to pay the bills in this thing. How y'all doing? I hope everybody's having a great time. I know I'm having a blast. I'm joined by some wonderful guests, Chris Getzlaff and Charleston Hughes here to my right. Let's go into here and let's see what the next topic is for discussion.
Oh, boy.
We got Ryan Phillips joining us soon, too. All right, here it goes. LeBron James. LeBron right now is averaging 25.6 points, 7 rebounds, and 10.8 assists, leading the league in assists right now. Year 17, year 18, how do you feel about seeing what LeBron's doing right now in the league? I think they're, 17-3, I believe, or 18-3 mm-hmm. after last night. So how you feel about what LeBron's doing, Chris? I'm not going to call you Andy anymore.
He's endless. I mean, he's just one of those players that's a superstar and going to be in the argument for best ever.
Is he the best ever?
He's in the argument for sure. I'm not going to say that he is or isn't. I mean, I'm a big Jordan fan. And I mean, but he has to be in the conversation. There's no question about that. And I mean, throughout my CFL career, it was probably the largest topic of conversation was, is it LeBron or Kobe or Jordan? And that was always going on in the locker room.
Did you ever do the Chuck Norris or Steven Seagal argument?
No, but that would be a fun argument. one to see.
Who would win a fight, Chuck Norris or Steven Seagal?
Good question.
Chuck Norris is 5'5". Steven Seagal's 6'6".
Yeah. Is he 6'6"?
Yeah, yeah. I got a picture with Steven Seagal at the UFC. I know the production manager of the UFC, so I was down there with her at the MMA Awards.
Wow.
And I got to meet Steven Seagal and along with a lot of fighters and stuff like that. So, yeah.
I remember Under Siege. That was a dead movie.
Yeah.
Big fan of that movie, so... Well, I mean, I guess it goes to goal then. That's a yeah. huge. Well, I mean, when you're talking that kind of size difference, and they're still able to move the way that they are with the martial arts, so yeah,
that's awesome. Mm-hmm. All right, Charles, back to LeBron. What you got?
Well, first of all, by any means, I am not a LeBron James fan, but he is arguably the best player of this decade. So you won't see a player that's more dominant than he is as far as size. You know, ability. He could take over a game if he wanted to, and he has been. I mean, any team that he goes to, he will be the best player on that team, hands down. For LeBron James, as it goes, like I said, I'm not a fan of his. I'm a Michael Jordan guy. Currently, Giannis, I'm a Greek freak guy. I like the Greek freak. I feel like he is going to be just as good or even better than LeBron.
So, sticking on the basketball thing, we talk about, like, the MVP race. Right now, it's pretty early to talk about MVP race, but you look at guys like Giannis, who's doing really well. LeBron's doing really well. Luka Doncic's doing really well. And then you have James Harden. One of the biggest things about James Harden is you watch the games. You watch Houston games. I don't know if you watch basketball, Getz, but I'm a huge basketball fan. It's my favorite sport, actually. And watching the Houston game the other night, and Westbrook and James Harden go 18 of 68 from the field, and they lose in double overtime. James Harden has 50 points, went 24 for 24 from the free throw line. Like, when you see a guy taking 38 shots and only making 11, but scoring 50 points, is that impressive to you, or is that just too much?
Well, you got to think, James Harden, a volume basketball player, so the whole entire offense goes through his hands. He don't play defense either. So the whole entire offense goes through his hands. So he has to touch the ball at all times, and he'll sit there and dribble, 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 take a shot. When he's on, he's on. Don't get me wrong, but when he's off, and he's not making a lot of shots, he does have to get the rest of the offense involved. So that's why I think that's why they involve Westbrook into the package.
Chris. My thoughts on that would be, I mean, that's a terrible shooting percentage, but at the same time, you said he was 24 for 24 from the line.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone that is going to the line that many times, you're putting a lot of pressure on the other team, possibly getting guys to foul out if you're getting to the line that many times. So you are bringing other advantages along with that, with the missed or small shooting percentage, I'll say.
And, you know, they say as a shooter, you want to see the ball go through the hoop, right? That's why when they shoot it after timeouts, people knock it down. They don't want it to go in because they don't want shooters to see the ball go through the hoop. And with him going to the line 24 times, it really gives him advantage because he gets to see it go through the hoop a lot and do that. So early first half or first quarter of the season, who's the MVP right now? What would you think?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I say Luka, because he came out of nowhere, and he's still a kid. He's only what, 20 years old? Yeah, and
most triple doubles by somebody 20 and under.
Yeah, so it'd probably be Luka, just because he's up and coming. He did far more than what everybody expected he was going to do this year. So,
you know, he's one game behind Jordan right now for most consecutive 25-5 games. He's got 17. Jordan had 18. So we're going to see here. That's they play nice. On Saturday. We'll see what happens. Chris, who you got for MVP
That's
right
impressive.
Now?
That's impressive. I'm not going to throw one out there because I haven't been watching basketball enough to really have a valid
that's
opinion.
All right.
So
Luka is very dobra. All my Serbians out there.
Charleston says he can speak Serbian. Charleston, can you say something in Serbian for us, please?
Let me see. What are you? I don't know what you want to hear. Dobra. That means good.
I don't know. Can
Ciao.
Somebody confirm that?
That means
can somebody
high.
Like Google that and confirm with me?
Tisi Tisi lepa dovojka.
What is going on? Hey, we got Ryan Phillips up here. Ryan, can you hear me? I think Ryan's coming in right now. Hey, how's it going? Charleston's over here
good,
speaking
man.
Serbian.
Oh my gosh! You really? I just can't. I can't believe he really knows really any words. I don't believe that.
He's really speaking Serbian. But I just want to introduce Ryan Phillips from Eastern Washington, 5-time West All Star, 4-time CFL All Star, holds some BC records for most return yards in a career and a season. Has 12 interceptions in a season. That's the most. 6 defensive touchdowns. And most return interception touchdowns at 5 in a career, 47 career interceptions. Welcome to the show, Ryan Phillips. It's been like a Hall of Fame stack event today.
How you do all those stats?
Darian threw him the ball a lot. That, and I seen him talking about it. We were in Montreal together. I seen him and Darian in the back talking. I always said if we want to win a game, put Ryan Phillips in, and he going to complete the ball to Ryan. Play offense.
That's crazy, man. That's crazy. That's crazy. Nah, man, I had a good defensive line, man. I had a good defensive coordinator. But, you know, other than that, man, you know, when you get an opportunity to make some plays, man, you got to make plays. So it's pretty much that simple.
How was it transitioning from being a great player on the field to a coach this past season?
I mean, it was great, man. You know, when you surround yourself with guys that, you know, are all on the same page as far as trying to put yourself in position to win games, was definitely huge. I think we had a good nucleus of guys in the room. And then we had some additions later on in the season that I think helped us get to where we wanted to be. It would have been great to get those guys, you know, a little bit sooner. But even then, though, I think everybody got an example of what we could have been in the later part of the season. So it was great transitioning just to get, you know, opportunity to see the other side of things and be able to, you know, be on the coaching side where you're dealing with personnel and game planning and some other things that you didn't think about, you know, as a player all the time, the work that got put in towards those things. So, I mean, it was a great transition for me. It was definitely everything I expected and more. And hopefully, you know, I continue to have that opportunity, you know, when the job comes along.
So you had the ability to coach. You were fortunate enough to coach two guys from your area, Aaron Grimes and TJ Lee. Can you talk about kind of the friendship and you knowing them before your coaching and then being able to go out there and coach them every day? And both of them played outstanding this year and got better as the year went on.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I kind of teased them about before the season started was, you know, don't take our personal relationship, you know, out to the field. You know, you got to kind of cut that fine line. I've known those guys for a long period of time. So, you know, you gotta make that fine line, but it makes it a lot easier when you have professionals, and those guys are true professionals. They take their job seriously. They want to perfect their craft. So we didn't have any, you know, any discrepancies or anything like that when it came to when it's time to work. So, I mean, it was great for me to be able to have veteran guys like that, guys that have been successful. Aaron's been able to win a Grey Cup. TJ's been able to be, you know, an all-star and things like that. So to have leadership in a room like that, guys that I can rely on, that I trust, and I trust going to put their best foot forward, makes it easier for me to concentrate on maybe the younger guys or some other guys that might need to be molded a little bit differently, coached a little bit differently, even have to spend more time with them, a little bit more in tune to whatever it is we're trying to get out of them. So I was more fortunate to have them guys than maybe they, you know, were more fortunate to have me, to be honest. I think they made my transition a lot more smoother. And, you know, at the end of the day, hopefully I got the best out of them, and they definitely got the best out of me.
Well, we have to take one more break, and then we're going to come back with a little bit more Ryan Phillips before we wrap this thing up. Appreciate y'all being here on the Dan. Wow. Who's Dan? Right, I'm thinking right. I'm Dan Patrick now.
Right.
On the Rod Peterson Show, it's Nick Lewis. It's the Takeover. You can watch live on Facebook Live or rodpeterson.com.
He's covering everything that matters to you. It's the Rod Peterson Show. Tune in live Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to noon, to catch the show live and be a part of the action. Take control by commenting live and sharing the show with your friends.
Every sale held in 2019 has led up to our biggest event of the year. Ring in the savings with year-end clear out at Capital Ford Pre-Owned. We're making a list and checking it twice of the biggest savings on pre-owned vehicles this holiday season. 2018 F-150 XLT 4x4s are starting at just $29,999 plus tax. Plus, our entire inventory of used trucks is on sale. Ford, Chevy, Ram, and more. It's the most wonderful time of year at Ford of Canada's number one pre-owned Ford store, Capital Ford Pre-Owned in Regina.
Locally owned and family operated, Emerald Water, refreshing the Rod Peterson Show. From reverse osmosis to natural alkaline and distilled water, they are perfect for your home and office. Saskatchewan's number one source for commercial alkaline with natural electrolytes and minerals that are better for your body. Naturally occurring magnesium, calcium, bicarbonate, and potassium are amazing for your health. Trust 30 years of experience and drink water that matters from Emerald Water.
You got something to say? You want to add to the show? What are you waiting for? Don't just sit there. Say something. Now, back to the studio with Rod.
What's up, everybody? You know, we're here running down late in the hour number two with Chris Guest-Lav and Charleston Hughes. Welcome to the overtime segment for Emerald Water. We still have Ryan Phillips on the line, I believe. Ryan, can we get you back in? There you go.
Yes, sir.
You look like you're taking selfies right now while we were taking a break.
I'm about to say, and I don't like it at all.
You know, one thing I want to talk about, inside the walls this year in B.C., we heard a lot of stuff going on outside the walls, and they talked about young coaches and being inexperienced and being some of the reason for some of our non-success. Can you touch on that? Because I know that, you know, for me, there were things that I wanted to say, but can you touch on that? And then I'll reiterate or whatever you need. And
I mean, I think there's a big misconception when it comes to experience as far as being able to get guys in tune to be able to get their best performance out. I think every player needs to be coached in their own in particular way to get the best performance out of the player. And that's not necessarily based on experience or based on anything else outside of that. You have to find ways to reach that player and ways for him to understand game plan and understand the expectation and the standard that you want to set as a team. So I don't think that comes with experience. I think that just comes with whether you're getting the most out of that player or not. And sometimes, you know, guys that, you know, overachieved or underachieved, and that comes down to it. And, you know, I've been on teams where, you know, we've had more veteran guys and things like that. And, you know, you didn't really have to coach as much because you had a great nucleus of guys that already knew what the expectation was and the standard was. When you're dealing with a younger group, there's a lot of things that have to take place for you to get the best performance out. And sometimes guys, you know, pan out and they don't. And that's just kind of what it really boils down to. And when you're relying on maybe some other guys that are veteran guys that you expect, you know, maybe to carry the team or do some other things, and you don't get that out of them, then that also, you know, plays a precedent. So one thing that Wally always told me was, you know, he just prepares you for that, but he can't play for you and he can't play the game. And, you know, that's something that I definitely had to, you know, take into account this year, just due to the fact that, you know, you feel like you're preparing players to play, to put the best performance out there. But when it comes in between the lines, you know, things still have to be executed at a high level. And, you know, for us that were in between the walls, we know how we were preparing, the hours that we put in, how we were trying to put guys in position to make plays and be successful. And all the time it didn't come out to our end or come out to our benefit. So, you know, that happens regardless if you're the 20-year coach or whether if you're the first-year coach. Guys win and lose, and sometimes you have to go through growing pains to be able to, you know, make things come out in your favor. And right now at this point, you know, this year we didn't get that end of the stick a lot of the times. And towards the end of the year, I think we're building towards that. And hopefully, like I said, we all get the same opportunity again and be able to expand upon that.
That's a great answer. I don't know if I have anything more to say than that. That's pretty great. You know, you do get it. And I mean, I could understand that being one way. I talked to Kevin Glenn about this. And, you know, we put so many years around the game. We've all coached other guys while we've been there. You know, me being in Calgary, being able to communicate with a young Eric Rogers and Kamar Jordan and those guys, and having Cope and Rambo communicate with me when I was young. And we've all been in that position where we actually help each other so much and explain things to each other. What do you feel like prepared you most, your playing career prepared you most for your coaching career last year?
Honestly, like just what you touched on. I had guys like Baron Miles and Mark Washington when I first came in. And all those guys are premier coaches now. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Mark Washington is a defensive coordinator who is one of the top defensive coordinators in the league. and also getting interviewed for head coaching jobs. Barron Miles, who's one of the best positional coaches and one of the best players that played this game, and from the secondary standpoint, who should be, you know, a defensive coordinator somewhere right now. So those guys molded me and kind of taught me what it was to be a professional first and foremost. I think that's something that, you know, gets taken for granted. Guys don't take serious all the time. Those guys were perfect examples of what it took, you know what I'm saying, to be professional and also be able to balance work life and home life. You know, they definitely, you know, showed me examples of how to do that. But then also the same extent, how to take on a group. You know, when you're coaching, you're still taking on a group. You're taking on a group of men, and it's different than coaching, you know, kids and so forth. But you're taking on men, you're taking on egos, you're taking on personalities, things like that. And they were the leader of our group when I came in as a rookie. So they were already coaching as it was. So when they left, it was my opportunity to do that same thing. So those guys like TJ Lee that I also played with that was younger, you know, that was things that I wanted to teach him. So then that way, you know, so now that he has this opportunity, you know, I don't have to do as much as a coach as far as like grooming him per se, but I can focus on other areas that might need a little bit more attention. So, I mean, those guys honestly molded me to be the coach that I am now, and I'm still growing in that area, and I'm still growing as far as even, you know, talking to those guys because they're still growing as well. I think the game evolves so much and players evolve so much that you still have to adapt to the times, and the times could change at any moment. So, you know, that's where, to me, experience kind of goes, you know, maybe left field to some degree, because you could have a 20-year experience, but you're not adapting to the times. And at that point, you know what I'm saying, you're kind of stuck in a gray area. So you got to be able to adapt to the players and adapt to the times of the game. And I feel like that's something that, you know, so I could be able to do to a high level.
I appreciate that. Hey, this is really the overtime. We're going to go over a little bit because we got some things we need to discuss. You brought up a great point. Chris, who do you think is the most influential player you ever played with that made an influence on you? And what was your favorite coach, or who was your favorite coach?
Oh, wow. That's a bag right there.
On the spot right now.
Honestly, I mean, a couple guys had some good tips for me when I came into the league. Dominguez and Flick, I mean, they were around right at the very start.
DJ.
But, I mean, to be honest, I think that our core group that kind of all came in the same time, we were touching on it earlier, you know, Fantuz and Beg, Dressler. I think that us kind of together, we were able to mold kind of each other. We all gave each other tidbits of information that we had obviously received from other people or seen out on the field. We all put in the work to really study the opponent and who we were going against. So I think our communication on a week-to-week basis with each other definitely helped propel my career. When it comes to coaching, I mean, I've had several good coaches over the years. I can't really speak badly about any individual coach or anything. So
I can, but I'm not.
Okay, cool. Ken Miller, I'm a big fan of Ken Miller and how he brought it. I mean, he had a great offensive mind, and I think that he was way more likely to ask you about, hey, like, how was your weekend? How's your family? And, you know, I think guys took to that. It makes you want to play for a guy like that.
Yeah, got real personal with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Charleston?
Ooh, it was tough on us because – when I first came into Calgary as a rookie in 2008, we all came in fresh.
Oh, you was looking up to me?
Yeah,
oh, I appreciate it.
It was a whole new staff. It was a whole new team. Like, it was fresh from the start. So everybody was rookies. And the first thing they told us in meetings were, every position's open. So the best player is going to play. The best player is going to be on the field. So I had to figure it out. In the middle of camp, I moved from linebacker to defensive line. So I really had to figure it out and watch film and try to figure out how to pass rush, who's the best pass rusher in the league right now. So I kind of looked at I think his name was Flemings. I watched Flemings.
Joe Fleming.
Yeah, I watched Flemings. I watched Cam Wake. I watched all the guys that were the top pass rushers in the league and said, okay, I have to find a way to be exactly like these guys or find their best moves and use it on the field. So I took all the best moves from all those guys and applied it to my game and ended up working out.
That's awesome. Coach?
For coach, I would say Chris Jones, really. You know, he was the one who – I wasn't one of his guys initially, but he was one of the guys who said, look, the best guy's going to play. I know you're good. I know you can play, but if you ever fall off in a game or if you ever have a span of about two or three games where you don't play good, he was like, I'm going to get rid of you and I'm going to find somebody to replace you. And when a coach keep it real with you like that, it's like, man, I gotta be on my A game at all times because I don't want to get replaced. I don't want to go home. So when he light a fire under your, you know what, you know you gotta play some football now. And once he approached me and hit me with that ultimatum and said, hey, you gotta play or you going home, I gotta play. I'm in the fire from start to finish.
That's it, man. I appreciate Ryan Phillips for joining us. Thanks for coming on, brother. You got any last words for us?
Man, just good luck to everybody, man. I appreciate being on the show. Man, I'm actually surprised they let you take it over out of all people. But, you know, I'm going to make sure, you know what I'm saying, that that the guys that, you know, have an opportunity, man, to coach and be able to play, man, take your career seriously. It's short span, man. Obviously, the guys there, man, you know, they kind of beat the odds, obviously, from that standpoint because – you know, those guys have played a lot of years and a lot of football and have been very successful and won great cups. But we all know, man, it's still short-lived. So, you know, be able to take it, you know what I'm saying, every day and every memory, man, all the way seriously. And, you know, don't take it for granted. And, you know, at the same extent, man, continue to build relationships, man. They go a long way.
Long way. Well, appreciate you for joining in.
Is that that new Bentley truck you in right now?
No, we ain't going to put that out there. We're not gonna put that out there.
Well, thank you. Yeah, so you know, I'll just touch on mine real quick. I'm pretty open about my most influential person was Jermaine Copeland coming into the locker room in 2005 after my rookie year. I remember Jim Barker told my agent. We're trying to work out a new deal, and he was like, "Well, we don't know if he's going to make the team. We got Kenyon Rambo coming in, Marte Jenkins, and Jermaine Copeland, and we have all these guys coming in, and we don't know if he's good enough to make the team." And I made the team, and I remember in training camp, Cope told me, he said, "Man, part of the reason I came here is because of you." And he's like, "We're going to be like Batman and Robin, and we're going to run this thing." And I was like, "Let's go." He taught me how to be a professional. He taught me how to – he was like, you don't want to be the guy that's going to be really good and bounce around from team to team and go from every team in this league because you're really good, but nobody can deal with the attitude and everything else. So it was a growing up maturity thing because my rookie year, I mean, I wouldn't say we had great leadership. We had great players. And that's one of the things is once we found that true leadership and coped, and I think that turned the corner. And I always talk about Huff because Huff taught preparation. And it's just like life. When you're prepared, you can do anything. You just got to prepare yourself. It'll cure all nerves, all everything. I seen the guys yesterday joking around, talking about me playing this cool and coming up here and doing this today. And one of the things is I'm always going to prepare myself, right? I'm going to prepare myself because I know how to be successful. And I appreciate these guys for letting me be here. We'll talk about one last thing. What do you got going on in this offseason? Or not, it's not your offseason anymore. It's your job now.
Yeah, the offseason, it's just like one of my really long now.
Yeah, like one of my friends, he was like, I'm babysitting. I'm like, no, that's your son. You are a father.
Yeah.
So what do you got going on now, Chris?
I'm a financial advisor. Work with CG Wealth Management, with investment planning councils, our dealer. But I've been doing it for 11 years already. You know, I was one of those guys that in the locker room every single year, I would preach, hey, what do you do in the off season? Well, I just train. I'm like, you should get a job.
Yeah.
Because you don't know when this game's going to be taken away from you. So I was preparing for after football within 2 years of being in the league because you never know how long it's going to be. And, you know, I was blessed to be able to play 11 years, and it helped with the transition, already having that job set up for afterwards.
Did you ever have a celebration?
I mean, I didn't do a lot. I mean, I did a couple different celebrations. I wouldn't say anything that really stuck. It was always in the moment, you know, scoring a touchdown. There's not much like that adrenaline rush that you get for that.
I just remember the hands in the air running through the back of the end zones, both hands up.
Yeah, well, you got to see it a few times. I'd say I scored the bulk of my touchdowns against Calgary. So.
Whoa.
I scored my first.
Well, that's true.
I scored my first touchdown in Sask at Old Mosaic. You know, do you know what my celebration was? The Ric Flair off the goalpost. Caught an out route, ran to the goalpost, hit it, came off of it, did my Ric Flair and my little woo.
I like that.
Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Way before there was Give me a Ric Flair and two claps.
Yeah.
Tell us what you got going on this offseason.
Well, I'm just rehabbing right now, just trying to get my arm together. You know, I just had surgery on Monday, so really trying to get back in the groove, get my arm back, get back to lifting weights, try to get back to working out. Doing a lot of stuff with football right now. Got some special news coming up pretty soon.
And you want to give up today?
Well, I'm starting a football league for the youth, for high school kids transitioning into college football. So I'm going to help out with a lot of kids throughout all of Saskatchewan and Manitoba, really, and try to bring football to the smaller communities that caters to the six-man, seven-man, eight-man, nine-man football, all the little communities that can't have, you know, football teams or play against competitive football leagues. So I'm going to start a league that where all these schools that have 12-man or 11-man football that can compete against schools that have six, seven, and eight-man football.
Man, that's awesome. If you need any help from me, just let me know. I'm around. Yeah. You know, I'm around here. You know, a lot of guys always ask me, like, what am I doing here? You know, my wife's from here. My family's here. And I've enjoyed being here lately just because it is a close community and things. And to see it from this side of things is pretty cool. Charleston, you live here in the offseason now.
Mm-hmm.
And Getty obviously lives here. And, you know, he's done some great things. I'm pretty sure you're still probably in the community. People ask you to do stuff all the time. I appreciate you for coming by. You know, one of the things for me is I really appreciate Rod for allowing me to do this show, man. This is awesome that for the crew to come in, allow me to the opportunity to host this show. I'm building my own podcast for the new year. I'm going to do two different versions. One's going to be on life coaching, leadership, and health, and the other one's going to be on sports. So stay tuned for that. I'll have a website soon and everything. So that's what I'm doing, build for the offseason, and hopefully I'm on the sideline somewhere. I see somebody asked earlier what am I going to be doing. Hopefully I'm on the sideline somewhere. I've reached out to some teams, and I've talked to them and stuff, so we'll see what happens. You know, I'm passionate about it, just like Joaquin, Bradley, and one of the things when you invest in people, and when you see them do well, there's no better gratification. When I won the Grey Cup in 08, like you said, we were young. And it was a totally different feeling. I went out, I balled, I had 122 yards, something like that. And it was like I was one of the best players on the team, and we won the Grey Cup. And in 2014, I was still coming off the injury. I was hurt. I was older. And it was like it was a more mental approach, how to help everybody else around me do what they do. So it's two different feelings, right? So once you're helping other people, man, it is great. I remember, I don't know if you've seen me running down the sidelines, jumping up with Rudd after the fake punt or when he runs back to touchdown. You know, other coaches was be like, Sean White, he was like, man, we're watching a special teams video and you're running down the sideline with Rudd. I'm like, you know, I'm so passionate and I invest in young men and these people. And so, man, I've had a blast. I hope you had a blast. I want to thank all of our sponsors, Prairie Mobile Text Line, Daily Capital, Daily Pole Capital Auto Mall, Bronco Plumbing and Heating Rant, Deer Valley Golf Club, and just thank the sponsors, man, for allowing this to happen. Thanks, Rod Peterson. Thank you to all the guests, man. It was great. For Damon Allen, John Bowman, Chris Getzlaff, Joaquin Bradley, Ryan Phillips, everyone to come in, Kelly Rempel. We had a great, great 2 hours. It goes really fast. In the famous words of Garth Brooks, when we're free to love anyone we choose, when the world is big enough for all different views, when we all can worship from our own kind of pew, then we shall be free. Stay classy, Regina, and stay golden, Pony Boy. We out.
For more Rod Peterson on demand, visit rodpeterson.com.